Many of you know that I like to sail. And about 4 years ago, I was about 3 miles offshore in the panhandle of Florida area, and I was having a really good time. I was by myself, just enjoying the wind, sunshine. It was about 15-mile-an-hour wind. There's dolphins playing alongside, and it's crystal clear water. You could go down and look down and see fish. And I'm just kind of zoning out, I guess you call it, you know, just kind of in a really good mood. And it started registering that I was going a little slower than I had been. And I thought, oh, you know, the breeze died down, but I looked at the sail, it's up there good. And then I glanced down the companionway, and there was about a foot of water there. Well, that woke me up real quick. And I thought, well, I have this electric bilge pump that's supposed to take care of that, but water kept coming in. And I quickly, for every hole in a boat's hull, there's supposed to be a valve. And we call it a shut-off valve or whatever, seacock. I quickly made sure that all the seacocks were, turned off, but water kept coming in. I thought, well, it's still not a problem. I had a manual bilge pump, supposed to be 10 gallons a minute. Has a little bar you stick in it, and then you pump it up and down like this, and it's supposed to, 10 gallons a minute is a pretty good rate of flow for water. And I put that in, and I started pumping. And I pumped, and I pumped, and I pumped. And I kept checking. The water kept getting deeper and deeper, and I thought, Tim, I think you're going to go down. I just had a new radio, waterproof, fortunately. And I decided, for those of you that are not nautical, mayday means you're in danger of your life. A pan call is in danger of the vessel. So I made a pan call. Pan, this is, the sailboat Stella. And I was really happy. I just put in a GPS. So I could give them the latitude and longitude. I'm out here off the coast. I need help. My boat's going down. Well, the Coast Guard came back right away. Oh, what's your problem? Well, I'm taking on water. I've been pumping for 20 minutes. It's still getting deeper. Oh, we'll be right out. So I'm pumping. And every once in a while, about every 5 minutes, they would call, are you still there? Are you still floating? Yes, but I'm getting lower. Oh, we're coming. And I waited, and I pumped, and I waited, and I pumped, and I waited. By this time, the water was about right here. And before we had gone to the mission field, my wife and I had always worked opposite shifts to try to not have our son stay too long with babysitters. So we met on the weekends, and for years we did that, and I thought, I want to do something as a family, so we started building this boat. We were going to take, a year off and just get to live together for a whole year, And then I got to thinking, that's kind of selfish, just doing your own thing, so we checked out AFM, and because you can plan a church while you're doing it together, too. So that's what we did. I got rid of the hull that I had built. And anyway, long story short, God gave us the same boat that I was building, only finished by the factory. And so that was the boat, and I call it God's boat. So I'm saying, God, this is your boat, and if you want to keep it, I think it's going to the bottom. If you want to keep it, you better do something real fast. Coast Guard call, are you still there? I said, yes, where are you? I gave you my latitude and longitude. And they said, we're here, we don't see you. And I said, I'm right here. Well, what can you see? Water. Land, but maybe a radio tower. 3 miles away, you can't really see a whole lot. It doesn't help us. And finally, the water's up to here. He's up to my life jacket is like a vest, and it exploded, so then you can't really move too much because these big bladders are attached to you. And I noticed that there was this boat way out in the horizon just kind of circling around, and I said, "Is that you circling around?" And they said, "Yeah, we can't find you." I said, "Well, I'm a sailboat. I'm over here." "Oh, we thought you were a powerboat." Well, by the time that they came, the Coast Guard guy said maybe 2 minutes you would have been, you know, it's kind of at the place where you're at the water level and the boat's just kind of ready to go down. A crew member started to jump on the deck, and he goes, no, you do that, it's going down. So they passed me this 6-inch pipe, and I put it down in there, and within 20 minutes, you know, we were floating again. But the water kept coming in, and so every 15 minutes or so, he had to turn his engine back on to pump me out. Well, he towed me, we lashed the boats together, he towed me to a place where they could pull it out, and the mechanics and the marine people went through the boat. They couldn't find out where the water's coming from. They said, "There's no problem with this." I went over the hull, they went over the hull, there was no holes. And I said, "You know, if you put me back in, I'm going to go to the bottom. I just know it." Well, we can't help you. So I'm sitting there in the cockpit, and I'm praying. I said, "Lord, still your boat. You saved it for now, but I need to know why it's taking on water." And for some reason, I was playing with the bilge pump, and I cranked it and put my hand over the edge of the hose, 2-inch hose, and the suction side blew. I said, So I checked the other side, and the blowing side sucked. Somebody, this is a 25-year-old boat, put the sump pump in, the bilge pump in backwards, and all of what I was doing in pumping was pumping seawater into the boat. It has a little check valve that's supposed to keep seawater from coming in, but because it was reversed, water could come in and couldn't get back out. And the seas was just, it was like hot coursing, so every time the bow went down, it would force a little water in until it started to siphon. And here you have a 2-inch hole letting water into your boat. The commander asked me to call him when I figured it out, and I did, and he said, 5 brand new boats he knows of in the last 3 years went straight to the bottom because the factory had done the exact same thing. They installed it backwards. I can tell you that backwards moving water can sink ships. I'm very certain of that. But backwards moving people can sink churches. You believe that? I want to read you a poem. I think you'll catch on. It wasn't written by me. I wish it was. Backward Christian soldiers fleeing from the fight, with the cross of Jesus nearly out of sight. Christ, our rightful master, stands against the foe, but forward into battle we are loath to go. The chorus. Backward Christian soldiers fleeing from the fight, with the cross of Jesus nearly out of sight. Next stanza. Like a mighty tortoise moves the church of God. Brothers, we are treading where we've often trod. We are much divided, many bodies we, having different doctrines, not much charity. Next stand, crowns and thorns may perish, kingdoms rise and wane, but the church of Jesus hidden does remain. Gates of hell should never against the church prevail. We have Christ's own promise, but we think that it will fail. Sit here then, you people, join our useless throng. Blend with ours your voices in a feeble song. Blessings, ease, and comfort ask from Christ the King. With our modern thinking, we don't need a thing. and backwards Christian soldiers fleeing from the fight with the cross of Jesus nearly out of sight. Does that sound like a church that you know of? I hope not. It's not any church that I want to join. But you know, in our Bibles, we find a group of people who could have sung that song and meant it. And if you will, if you have a Bible, turn in with me to Exodus, the 14th chapter. Those of you who have been coming to our Wednesday night Bible study, we've talked about this. But I think we can learn a few more things there. Chapter 14, starting verse 10. And when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, "Because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt?" You see, the Egyptians had raised the art of grave digging or grave sites to really high. I mean, there's more graves in Egypt than anywhere else. Big pyramids, everything. So, I mean, this was said in a very bitter, sarcastic way. Verse 12, "Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, 'Let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians'? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness." And Moses said to the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more forever. The Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace." And the Lord said to Moses, "Why do you cry to me? Tell the children of Israel to drop down, form a committee, and study the problem." Oh, got that wrong. Sound the trumpet for a retreat. Nope, that's not right either. What does he say? Tell the children of Israel to go forward. Let's look at that. Going forward. Just a week earlier, the people had been, you know, after several hundred years of slavery, you know, 2 or 3 days before this was written, they were going out of Egypt. They were singing the songs. They probably had their tambourines, and they were singing and dancing, and they were moving forward to where? To the promised land, to Canaan. They were happy. They were moving. But they only marched a couple of days, and they camped by the sea, and it seems like they've stopped their journey. There's a big Red Sea. Not really red, but a big blue sea that's called the Red Sea. There's mountains on either side, and here's the army coming behind. They were trapped. For all practical purposes, there's no way out. But in the midst of the confusion, they come to Moses and they're saying, you know, "Moses, why did you do that?" You know, they weren't asking that when they were coming out of Egypt with, you know, loaded down with gold and silver and all kinds of things that the Egyptians had given them. Moses cries to the Lord and says, "You know, Lord, they're getting ready to stone me. What do you want me to do?" And here's the first key. They trusted God in their deliverance, but not for their circumstances. You know, has God given us deliverance? Yeah, we have deliverance from sin. I mean, that's what the gospel's all about. But how often do we forget to trust God in our circumstances? Did God know the Egyptian army was going to come? Sure. He led them there on purpose. But it takes faith to trust things that are going, looks like they're going bad. It takes faith to trust that God can also take care of the circumstances. You know, throughout the Bible, David despairs he's ever going to make it alive. He says, I'm going to perish at the hand of Saul. Elijah runs away when Jezebel threatens him and hides in a cave. You know, through the Bible, we can story after story of people who are maybe victorious at one time, but then seems like they don't trust God for their circumstances. The devil makes sure. We have lots of reasons for not trusting God. You know, perhaps we're diagnosed with a disease, a problem. Maybe we lost a job. Maybe we have a spouse that's difficult to get along with, or maybe we've lost a house or found ourselves in a difficult position. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons to doubt God in our circumstances. But God tells Moses, there's only one thing you can do. Go forward. I didn't bring you out to take you back. I didn't bring you out to leave you here. I didn't bring you out to have a big campsite here. It's not the land I promised you. This is wilderness. Believe me, I have something better for you in mind. But you got to go forward. I think that at least once in every person's life, you need to just drop your baggage and go. I've done it once or twice. Really saves on the mini storages and things like that. I believe the Lord would tell us today that there's nothing to go back to. If you go back, you're going to be destroyed. You're going to return to a life of slavery. The best thing for you to do is to go forward. You know, in the Australian, I don't know if you've ever seen the coat of arms that Australia has. It's kind of unique. It has two animals on it. One is an emu and one is a kangaroo. And those two animals have something in common. Does anybody know? They can run fast. Both of them can run fast. They can't go backwards. The emu has a big three-toed thing that if he goes backwards, he falls over. And the kangaroo has a big fat tail that doesn't allow him to go back. That's why they're on the coat of arms, is the country doesn't want to think about going backwards. I think those who choose to follow Jesus are going to be like the emu and the kangaroo, only moving forward. We may pause to think. It's okay. We may take time to pray. That's okay. But backwards moving Christians sink churches. The church today, I think God's telling us the harvest is white and ready for harvest. What I want you to do is rise up and go do the things that I'm telling you to do. Forget the past. Forget Egypt. Forget pain and agony. Bury it and go forward. I think to us individuals, God would say, get up. Stop sleeping and being lazy. Stop wallowing in your pity and your bitterness and anger and go forward. Have you ever heard people sit around and complain that the church is dry and cold and needs a revival? I've done that a few times. But I think what you and I need to realize is that because we're individuals, individuals make up the church. And if the individuals are not moving forward, how can the church move forward? We need to be the ones moving forward because we are the church. I think the ways things are going, shaping up history-wise or politically wise, that it can't be long before the Lord's coming back. And I think now's the time not to be lazy. Now's not the time to be satisfied with where we are. Now's not the time to turn around and move backwards. Now is the time to move forwards. There's nothing in the world worth going back to. Why would you want to go to the right or the left? There's nothing to do but to go forward. I think, though, some of us would like to just stay and camp out and enjoy the view. You know, Red Sea is very nice. We like it where we are. We're satisfied. We're comfortable. We like being depressed. We like being angry. We like not being active in church. Sometimes we like this place of bitterness that we find ourselves in. But I think God is calling us out of our comfort zone. He doesn't want us to stay there. He wants us to go forward. He doesn't want us to be destroyed. Well, you may ask, hey, Tim, why? What's the big deal? Well, I think there's a couple of points that we can see from this illustration. In verse 10, we'll read it again. When Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. First lesson. When you stop moving in faith, you start complaining. If you're complaining, you better watch out, because it may be because you stop moving forward. If you stop walking by faith, you start to live in fear. And fear is the first step. World War II, General Patton was interviewed by a man. The news reporter says, "Wow, you're really a brave man, aren't you?" And Patton said, "Sir, I am not a brave man. The truth is, I am an utter craven coward. I have never been within the sound of gunshot or in the sight of battle in my life that I wasn't so scared I had sweat in the palms of my hands. But I've learned very early in my life never to take counsel of my fears." So instead of putting our trust in God, we begin to believe more of the lies of the devil, and the devil puts the fear of sickness and death and bankruptcy and failure and all those things, so that when you don't move forward, you're fearful. When they came out dancing and singing, there wasn't a bit of fear in their hearts, right? They were leaving Egypt. They were leaving their slavery. They were excited. They were marching. They were singing. As long as they're moving in that direction, they were okay. But the minute they stopped going forward, their faith was replaced with fear. Now they were like a scattered sheep crying and wailing in the wilderness. You know, sometimes God calms the storms of life, and sometimes he lets the storms rage and he calms the child. The storm doesn't always stop, but we can always be assured that he calms his child. Perfect love doesn't know fear. So if you're filled with fear today, it's a good sign you've probably stopped in your spiritual journey or in your spiritual progress. Somewhere you've camped by the Red Sea and your faith is being replaced with fear. Dr. Stanley Jones, I think Bruce read this same quote not too many weeks ago. "I am inwardly fashioned for faith, not fear. Fear is not my native land. Faith is. I am made so that worry and anxiety are sand in the machinery of my life. Faith is oil. I live better by faith and confidence than by fear, doubt, and anxiety. In anxiety and worry, my being is gasping for breath because it's not my native air. But in faith and confidence, I breathe freely because these are my native air." It's easy for us to be satisfied with where we are, but that's not what God wants for us. He wants to replace our fear with faith, and that comes by going forward. Verse 11, "Then they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt?" Sounds like a complaint. I messed up before. The first one was fear. The second one is complaint. They blamed all their problems on Moses. Didn't want to assume any responsibility. Usually the problem's not with the leadership, but with the followers. Isn't that true? When we fail to go forward, we lose our faith and start to fear, and then next we start to complain. Mark Twain says, don't complain about all your problems. 80% of the people don't care, and 20% of the people think you deserve it. So instead of being a marching, victorious army, Israel standing there murmuring, complaining, and threatening to stone Moses, as if Moses did all those, 12 plagues and miracles in Egypt. You want to know who the murmurers and complainers are in the church? They're the people who have stopped going forward. I'll give you something to complain about. Just think about your deposits in your bank being insured by an institution that's $1.6 trillion in debt. But anyway, that's off the topic. When you're going forward with God up front where the action is, you don't have time to complain. You're spending time with the Lord in prayer and in his word, and you're making progress in your spiritual journey. There's no room for complaining. It's a whole lot of difference in the front versus the back. In Burma, one of my heroes, Adoniram Judson, worked for, 20, 30 years without, I think he saw one person brought to Christ. And he was put in jail many times. There's this time he had 32 pounds of chains around his ankles. His feet were strapped to a bamboo pole. He can't really sit, can't really lie. And one of the fellow prisoners says, well, Dr. Judson, what's the prospect of conversion of the heathen now? Instantly, Judson, he didn't even think. He said, the prospects are just as bright as the promises of God. That takes a lot of courage and strength. Complaining, not complaining, doesn't mean there's nothing wrong. Something's always going to be wrong. Life isn't pleasant. Things don't go to suit us. But when you're going forward with your eyes on something, you don't have time to stop and think about that kind of stuff. You're going forward. Verse 12. Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than we should die in the wilderness. They said, Moses, just take us back to Egypt. We'll take back the slavery, we'll take back the whips. And this is just 2 or 3 days since they had left. Why would anyone want to go back to sin and slavery? You see a lot of people that are walking with their, looking over their shoulder like that. When we stop moving forward, we begin to slip backwards. It's impossible to stay there. It's just like a tree. A tree either grows or it's dying. There is no middle part. A church either grows or it dies. There is no staying still. Do you ever find yourself missing some of the things of the past, or do you ever find yourself wishing you could go back and do some of those things over again? When the past looks better than the future, guess what? You've stopped going forward and you're starting to slide back. The last 13. And Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more forever. The Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. Moses had seen God do a lot of mighty things. He knew God could see him through it. But God said, Moses, in verse 15, the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Confession isn't moving forward. Stop to think about faith is only faith if you act on it. Word faith means nothing. You have no faith unless you actually act on it, then it becomes faith. Something else, if you're not going forward, guess what? Somebody behind you isn't able to go forward either. You know, I'm sure there was, a couple million people there? And the people in the 50th row back couldn't go forward until the people in the front started going forward. Several years ago, I heard this story. You probably know it in the paper. 33-year-old Larry Walters decided he wanted to see his neighborhood from a new perspective. So he went down to the Army Surplus Store and bought 45 weather balloons, went down to the local party store and filled them all with helium, came home and tied them all onto a lawn chair, strapped himself in, and armed with a six-pack of beer, a peanut butter jelly sandwich, and a BB gun, he took off. He was expecting to go about 100 feet in the air. Well, guess what? He went 11,000 feet in the air. And he was blocking the main runway of Los Angeles International Airport. He was too frightened to shoot out his balloons. He stayed airborne for more than 2 hours. He forced the closing of lots of flights all over the U.S. When he finally was grounded and the police arrested him, the reporter asked him, he said, were you scared? Yes. Would you do it again? No. Why did you do it? Because, he said, you just can't sit there. At least he was right. He was moving, right? Stonewall Jackson found himself on one side of a river. He needed to get his soldiers and artillery on the other side of the river. So he called his engineers and he said, okay, I want you to build me a bridge. So they got to working in their tent, drawing up plans. And then he went to his wagon master and he says, you know, we got to get these wagons and the artillery on the other side. So the wagon master starts gathering, you know, rails and logs and rocks. And well before midnight, he comes and tells the general that everything is on the other side. And the general says, well, where are the engineers? Oh, they're back in their tent still designing the bridge. Moms and dads, maybe there are children waiting for you to stop fussing and get back on the right path and start moving forward like you used to. Have you ever thought you might be holding your children back because you're the one setting the example? If you fail to go forward, they might not. How many people look to other people, not just the children? How many are standing behind each one of us right now waiting to move but not making any move until you move? But Tim, you said, well, you know, people, I shouldn't, that's an excuse. They shouldn't use excuse. They can move forward on their own, and I agree. But whether we like it or not, you know, people are watching us. And I don't want that on my conscience. When God comes to the judgment, he said, why didn't you move? You know, that person behind was watching you and you didn't move. It has to start with us. The church won't move until the teachers and the pastors move. The children won't move until the parents move, and it goes on down. Someone has to start moving and going forward. You know, it's bad enough that I'm standing at a stop or crossroads in my life, but to think that I'm preventing someone else from moving really makes it even worse. And the last point. When you fail to go forward, you prevent yourself from seeing the miraculous. And the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward. God tells Moses, you get the people to start going forward. You take that rod, you stretch it out over the sea, and I will start the wind going. And those people were going to walk across on dry land. God always moves. And here's the take home, okay? If you don't remember anything else, remember this. God always moves when we are willing to go forward. We will never fail to see God working if we go forward in faith. A lot of times we say, well, if God would do this, then I would do that. Uh-uh, that's wrong. If God is calling you, you do it, and then God will come along and fix it. God says, take me at my word. Step out of the water. Go forward. When you do, I'll slip my hand under you, and I'll protect you, and I'll see you through it, and I'll do the miraculous. And what did God do? He sent wind. 2 million people go across an ocean on dry land. What is God's will for the church? What is God's will for you as an individual? I can tell you what it is. Two words, go forward. And now unto him who is able to keep you from falling, to present you faultless before the throne with exceeding joy, to the only wise God, our Savior, be honor, power, glory, majesty, now and forevermore. Amen.